Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of CookieCast. Today on CookieCast, we've got a bumper football podcast. That's right, it's a bumper episode. Lots of ins and outs been going on recently. Football games, but plenty of football games to come, so there's lots to go through. First off, apologies from me. Apparently, my internet provider deems it okay, acceptable, to charge me more money now without providing any kind of stable internet service. So we have a small outage partway through this. I feel it's recovered well, but just a heads up, that is coming. Before we get started, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. Big one being share the podcast around. If you've got a football fan in your life, send this podcast their way. They might even thank you for it. Right, let's get started. Here we go. This is CookieCast, football podcast.
Recording in progress.
Welcome on in, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that sometimes ends, but then I'll always start again the next week. Thank you, we're all here. As you can see, anyone that's joining us on YouTube, you can see four lovely, happy, smiling faces in front of you. I'm joined by Messrs. Cook, Moore and Woodmansey. How are we all this week? Boys.
All good?
We like to hear it, As good as we all can be, of course, given that there's been no proper football to be watching, we've had to make do with that international nonsense that isn't a tournament. That's the other thing. I said this to somebody the other day. I've found that I can only really watch England when it's an actual, when there's something at stake. And even the qualifiers don't really sort of do much for me anymore. It's mainly tournaments that I can sort of stomach at times. But
is that because you really enjoy seeing a penalty defeat, or
No. Right. Obviously, being English, I've learned to accept that penalties are just the natural progression of life, and. We might win one, but we'll definitely lose the next one, so it's fine. So, speaking of England, of course it brings us to the games that were played this week in the international break, and the first of those games was on Saturday, where England took on Brazil in what was the first permanent fixture for their new boss, Dorival, who for a second I thought had played for the Borough back in the day, but turns out it's a different guy. Because in case you weren't aware, those Brazilians like to reuse names as much as we do. I didn't actually see this game. I was out at the cinema. Didn't get back till late. So I only caught the last sort of 10 or 15 minutes of the game. Did anyone see it in its entirety and can describe the goal?
Not the entirety. I don't know. Like, reading the reports, it was like England were awful. I thought they were decent. I thought it was a pretty even game. I thought Brazil seemed decent. You know, but England more than held their own. It's the usual kind of questionable decisions in team selection here and there. The goal.
As much as he seems to get, like, obviously a bit panned on this podcast, it seemed as though they kind of missed the focal point and the fluidity that Kane brings to the front line at times. From the bits
the panning is the fact that he lions his stats and everybody all has a little circle jerk about how great he is when most of his goals are against. I'm pretty confident some of those teams I could score against. Definitely in my 20s, I reckon I could have got one. I mean, that's the thing. No one's doubting that he's not a good player. It's just the lining of the padding.
Tune in next week, folks, for when we arrange the Cookie Cast podcast friendly against San Marino.
What is it? Just us four versus the full 11?
And I'm not casting aspersions on you, gents, but all I can do is refer to myself as I am 42 years old, and quite overweight. So that's not a bet I'm taking. Take me back to like my 20s when I was a bit more
I've at least got a couple of years on you then. Obviously, the weight situation isn't much better for myself, so I'll just take the years and we'll leave it there. But yeah, I don't know. It just seemed like as though because he's the captain, because he obviously like is a lot of the play goes through. It just seemed as though they massively struggled when he wasn't there to sort of. I don't know.
But is it,
set the pace? Is, set the tone?
I agree with what Matt was saying. Like, I don't think they played that badly. The game was very open. Pakatash, for a friendly, should have been walked off. Because he is a dirty pig.
a dirty bastard.
he went down, like, people's Achilles with his studs at least three times and only got booked for the first one. It was almost like he'd been booked for it the once, and then the ref was like, "Oh, you've done it again. Oh, well, this is your last warning." I'm sorry, what? And then they let him get away with it again.
And then Bruno Guimaraes was doing his usual shit as well. So I think I'll stay nothing but consistent. He's a dirty little bastard. So chuck him in the pile. So yeah,
he did feel Brazil. Were missing like some of their flair players and had replaced them with the ones that were more adept in the dark arts, shall we say.
It was very reminiscent of the 94 World Cup Brazil side that was very workmanlike, I would say. Going back to the focal point striker thing, is that just not a tale as old as time? Probably since we've started watching England, Lineker was always the head striker, so that meant strikers like whoever else was about at the time didn't get a chance because Lineker always played. You know, and that was the kind of thing on Shearer when he first started. He was like, oh, it's not as good as Lineker, da 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 da. And then once he settled into the team, he then became the main striker. But then it's like, oh, Ian Wright's not good enough. Take your pick of all the other players. Robbie Fowler, who never got a run in the team because they don't play with each other week in, week out, so then it turns into every time they link up with England, they've got to form that fourth bond, and it only comes with that one striker. And that's why sometimes, and yes, I will die on the hill of him being a stat padder, in the games where we're going to win anyway, maybe he doesn't need to play, just in case there is that instance where he gets injured before a major tournament, and then you've got to try and form that partnership with a Watkins or with a Tony or with someone else instead of being like, oh crap, they need 10 games to settle in, which you haven't got.
So I would make the exact same argument for the goalkeeper. So yeah. John Pickford played, spoiler alert, obviously flash involved into the second game of the two. John Pickford played all 90 minutes of both of the friendlies. Fair enough, we know that he's probably going to start all of the games of the tournament, but if someone's, like, you know, chasing a 50-53 with him and that absolutely goes in Stubbs' eye and they, you know, takes him out, I think the combined caps for the other goalkeepers in the squad probably what 15 or something like that? So would you not use these friends as an opportunity to give the goalkeepers some minutes to see how comfortable they are on the ball and how they play and things like that.
Now, in this situation, Southgate's been very, very clever because the next time that Pickford lynch him because that guy does not shut up and everything is everybody else's fault. So there'd be a public lynching as the whole defensive line hangs him from the goalpost because they're sick of his shit. Because they want whoever else back on because, God, he doesn't shut up him.
We'll get to it in the second game, but not everything is everybody else's fault, eh, Matt?
Absolutely not, but he did it. He gave it a good fucking go at trying to blame somebody else.
He did. Anyways, Brazil game.
So to go back to the Brazil game, so it was like the lads have said, it seemed like it was a pretty even game until in the second half Brazil managed to break away and score the only goal of the game from Endrick.
Is he signing for Man City? Is he the one who's signing for Man City?
This is the latest super hope in Brazilian football that's agreed a deal with Real Madrid to join, I believe, in the summer. So, no great surprise. I mean, I don't even know who he plays for in Brazil, to be honest with you. But he's supposed to be very, very highly rated. I honestly can't remember the goal, to be honest with you.
Lewis gave the ball away about halfway and then turned like the Titanic to try and recover it by that which time. Brazil had made their way through on goal and it was squared neatly by, I think, the other substitute that came on to Endrick, who was coming from behind the ball, and he just slotted into an empty net. Yeah, it was nothing spectacular.
Dare I suggest this might not be the last time we hear the phrase Lewis Dunk with the error. England obviously went 1-1 down then, just couldn't really get forced their way back into the game, and that was a 1-0 Brazilian win. Podcast prediction wise, Andy had gone for a 2-0 England win. Sadly, no points there. I had gone for a 2-2 draw. Kane and Palmer to score for England. Neither played. Awesome. Martinelli and Vinicius Jr. for Brazil. I don't think Martinelli was even near the squad, so don't really know what's happened there. Matt had gone for a 1-1 draw. Watkins and Vinicius Jr. to score the goals. Watkins started, but obviously wasn't able to score. Vinicius Jr., I think, played the full 90 minutes and played a large chunk of the game. Stu had gone for a 2-0 Brazil win. Sadly, Martinelli or Jesus, I believe, didn't get on the pitch. So was never in danger of troubling the goal scorers there. So after the first game of the international window, 1 point for Mr. Womansey, no points for the rest of us, which takes us to the second game, which was England versus Belgium, to be played at Wembley yet again. This one started off quite hot. I think England were nervy. Would that be the right way to sort of explain the first 10 minutes?
Well, it's perfectly summed up the 11th minute.
So, I don't know what you could possibly be getting at, Stu.
I've seen some goals this season in person from teams suffering from a high press. This was possibly the worst one, but just purely for how it was laid out, from like the starting position of the goalkeeper being nowhere fucking near his goal.
It was a particularly bad one. He's obviously sort of collected a back pass on the left hand side outside the box, and he's obviously just gone to pick out he's gone for the switch out to the right hand side. To whoever's like playing on the right hand side, probably Phil Ford.
What can only be perfectly described as completely fucked it was the.
He just shanked it, hasn't he? He's just absolutely shanked it. He's kicked it. He's gone to absolutely loft it. He's just duffed it straight into the edge of the box. Did it go straight to Tielemans?
Yep.
Or was it Tielemans who led the lead?
No, it did. You know, it was more kind of, the ball went sort of centre mid, didn't he? And it was like pretty much a took one touch and a pass straight off, and Tielemans just like.
Yeah. To be fair to Tielemans, and they did say this on the commentary, if you look at the way that he finishes it, he does do it well. In the, like, he knows that Pickford's going to be coming back across the goal. So if he just goes for the way, if he goes from where he's going to, how do I phrase this? If he uses the space invaders approach, don't shoot at where they are, shoot at where they're not going to be. If that makes sense. So like obviously he's aimed for the corner of the goal where it would be very hard for him to stop his momentum to be able to stop the ball. It was quite a neat finish as far as from Tielemans.
It was almost like a double whammy for Pickford though, wasn't it? It was like, oh no, I've absolutely naffed that pass. And then ran past the ball as it went into the net as well.
not the best. So Belgium took the lead. England got back on level terms after Ivan Toney was brought down in the box. It was a neat play by Kobbie Mainoo on his first start for England, who managed to get the ball into Jude Bellingham's feet on the around the edge of the box. Bellingham played a lovely little slide pass through for Toney to get onto, which managed to get the ball just nip in front of Jan Vertonghen, who went for the ball but tackled obviously straight to the back of him, brought him down, penalty to England. Toney stepped up, hero that he is after all that he's gone through, with his fantastic technique of just staring the goalkeeper out, waiting for them to make the first move, he just rolled the ball the opposite side. England thought they doubled their advantage. No. England thought they'd taken the lead, which would actually be the correct terminology to use, when corner, it was a corner from the left-hand side that had been knocked back out and then played over again for Jared Bowen to get on the end of to head in. But on the close inspection, Bowen was one of two players in an offside position when he finished the ball, or finished the chance. So that first goal in England colours was very cruelly wiped off for Jared Bowen. And a couple of minutes later, England fell on 2-1 down as a ball over the top. Lewis Dunk tried to control it.
You forgot the bit where he ran through treacle. Apparently Wembley's pitch was made of treacle tonight as he trudged his way and was caught by Romelu Lukaku, that well-known AC striker.
He almost tried to play the little breakdance manoeuvre on the ground as well, didn't he, to clear it. Completely naffed that as well.
Let's just say that if Southgate's making his decisions for the tournament based on these two fixtures, I would say that Lewis Dunk could probably start planning his summer holidays because I don't think he'll be going to Germany. Let's put it that way.
No,
Early doors, Southgate, I'd have agreed with you. Now he'll just pick his favourites.
Well, I imagine that the first choice pairing is obviously going to be Maguire and Stones. If he's fit, he'll take Mark Gay because he seems to have picked him for a lot of the fixtures. He's just unfortunately he's injured at the minute. And I don't think Konsa played badly in the minutes that I saw him tonight. And Joe Gomez looked all right. So I imagine there's at least three or four players ahead of Dunk in the pecking order. And if worse comes to the worst, just play Calvin Phillips as a central defender, it's fine. No? We'll move on. Lukaku, I would say that he picked the pocket of Lewis Dunk, but it was almost as if Dunk just got his wallet out and just threw it at Lukaku's fucking feet.
He fell over, tripped up.
Recording in progress.
Apologies for that slight technical hiccup we had there. I believe we were discussing the second Belgian goal. So obviously England had equalised to that Ivan Toney penalty. And as we were saying, the second came about due to almost the colossal faux pas from Lewis Dunk, trying to obviously play his way into the England squad for the Euros, and to say that he dilly-dallied on the ball and made a bit of a hash of it would be a bit of an understatement. From what I can remember seeing, I believe he's tried to control the ball, but then loses it, then tries to chase it back, gets outpaced by Lukaku, manages to get back in, but then falls over and basically plays the ball into Lukaku's path for him to sort of take it on and then play what turned out to be a lovely crossing with the outside of his left boot for Tielemans to stoop to get the diving header to score the second. Have I described that sort of correctly?
Yeah, nailed it.
Yeah,
tried to clear it, fell over himself.
Not great for a man who's arguably trying to play his way into like a backup centre-half position for the European Championships when you've got other players breathing down your neck. You could maybe give him the argument that the weather maybe didn't help him. Am I clutching at straws a bit there to say that the rain was part of the reason why he's done what he's done?
I think he clutched at straws. I think it was just...
Yeah, that's fair enough.
He tried and panicked.
So 2-1 at half-time to Belgium. Didn't really see much of the second half, but it felt like it was just a lot of England trying to break Belgium down. Belgium then just breaking on the counter and trying to score that third goal. But England managed to sort of stand firm, and they, every time England kept trying to get the equaliser, there was a couple of good chances. I remember Foden had one where he was played in down the left-hand side and snatched at his shot and pulled it across the goal when it seemed like it was destined for the bottom corner. But they just kept plugging away and plugging away, and they eventually did actually find the equaliser in the 95th minute. When a ball was played into the box, took a bit of a bounce off the greasy surface, and it was looking like it was going out of play, but Ollie Watkins did his best to keep the ball in play. Managed to get it back to James Maddison, who played a little ball inside for Bellingham to come onto and strike from around the penalty spot to make it 2-2 in the 90th minute. I don't know, all in all, probably... obviously positive that they were able to keep going enough to get the equaliser, but another game where they've been sort of opened up with some fairly poor defending for the Belgian goals, and something that'll need to be addressed surely for the upcoming European Championships in the summer. What about you boys? Did you feel about the same, or
there seemed to be a bit more attacking impetus in this game? I think, like, you don't want to get too excited, but like that Mainu from Man United,
yeah,
he's got like Gaza vibes to him.
It's weird, isn't it? Because obviously,
kind of like
he plays as a defensive midfielder for Man United. I don't know if it was that. Because Rice was playing as a sort of the anchor in the midfield, if he was maybe feeling that he was given more of a license to go forward, which is strange, because normally it's Rice that plays that role when he's played for Arsenal, and like, you know, there's normally someone else who'll sit in for Arsenal, and Rice is the guy who's almost like box to box and stuff like that. But obviously Mainu was very, very involved for the first England goal, for the penalty. And I felt that he slotted in very, very well. Didn't seem overawed to say that he's only young and was his first England start. But I would say, yeah, he was definitely one of the more positive things to come out of the game, was that his performance in there didn't look overawed at all. And I would imagine that he certainly won't have done himself any harm in being considered for the tournament. But I'd be surprised if he's not in the list for at least... Have they got some friend? They've got some friendlies booked before the tournament. You're on mute, by the way, Matt.
Yeah, they've got like three or four.
I'd be amazed if he doesn't play at least one or two of the friends before the tournament starts to see if he gets in the final squad. So yeah, so 2-2 was the final score. Like we said, the goals were Tony and Bellingham for England, Tielemans with both for Belgium. Andy had gone for a 2-0 England win with Kane and Palmer to score. Again, neither player got on the pitch. So no chance of any points there for Mr. Cook. I'd gone for a 2-1 Belgium win. So I had mixed feelings about that Bellingham 95th minute equaliser. As I also had Saka, Lukaku and Doku to score the goals. So I didn't have any points, but I was on for 2 points for a correct score until old Jude popped up in the 95th minute. Stu had a 1-1 draw with Kane and Doku to score, so just bagged himself a point for the correct result. But Matt had gone for a 2-2. So 2 points there for the correct score. And also bagged himself a bonus point because he had Bellingham to score alongside Foden, Bakayoko and Doku. So bagged himself 3 points just for that game alone. So sadly, two games, no points for me and Mr. Cook. Stu, two games, a point apiece in each game. But taking the win is Matt with his 3 points from that one game, but obviously 3 points for the week overall. So well done, Mr. Moore.
All turned around in 1 minute.
Yes, how the tide does change. Obviously, we've got week 35 fixtures to get to. But before we go on to talk about that, we covered in last week's podcast that Nottingham Forest had been given a points deduction for their breach of profit and sustainability rule. PSR, that's it. Profit and sustainability rule. Or regulation.
Or FFP or...
Or FFP or whatever buzz three letters they're going to call it this week. They've since come out and said that they intend to appeal against the deduction, I believe. I was talking to Mr. Panas about this earlier today, and according to him, the rules of the appeal means that they can't provide any new evidence. They just have to go off what they've already supplied.
Right.
So, I don't understand why they've done this.
I think last week I said something along the lines of either Forest are being run by incompetence or belligerence. I think we got the answer yesterday at about, 1 minute to six? Because, obviously, they proceeded to then take the 7 days that they could have to decide whether they were going to appeal or not. They took, obviously, 6 days, 23 hours and 59 minutes to decide. I think last week I said I thought they got off lightly / alright. I think they've done alright. I thought it was reasonable. You kind of got to acknowledge the fact that whether you think the rules are right or wrong, or whether you think they're biased towards the higher earning clubs in the thing in the league, they're the rules and you kind of got to stick to them. So unless they're going to get a better opportunity to argue their case, which I don't understand why that would be the case. Yeah, I don't understand it. And the only thing, it could get better, but it could also get worse. And I kind of get the feeling that, obviously, they got 2 points taken off the deduction for being cooperative. Whereas this time, have they been belligerent and obtuse, and therefore... They're going to go, all right, and well, before you worked with us and tried to sort it out, and so then this time you've made it awkward, so you still got 4 points. Oh, yeah, and the two that you got for kind of good behaviour, well, you can have those two back as well, so now you've got to get 6 points. I don't know. I just wish they'd just taken their lumps and just kind of carried on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. Just to me, it almost feels like it's got that nature of why are they kicking the hornet's nest into it and stuff like that. They've obviously, like, they must know, like, that they've done something wrong, surely. Unless, unless obviously they've appealed it based on the fact that they must have, like, you know, books that don't agree with the books that they've been.
I think they've all along they acknowledge the fact that they've gone over what they should have done. So they acknowledge that 34 million that they were over. They acknowledged that that had happened and they were quite happy with that. Not happy with it, but they acknowledged that they'd done it and they weren't going to hide from it. I think part of the issue was that the part of the argument that was based on was that they were only over that for 2 months out of the 12. But it wasn't like Everton that went into the start of the season, like the start of the new period, already over the amount and then proceeded to do nothing about it. Whereas Forrest kind of obviously stayed within, and then I don't know whether bonuses kicked in, kickers on purchases kicked in, whatever, and it took them over the financial fair play limit. And then their argument was that I don't know whether other clubs had worked it out or whether other clubs had kind of worked it out. But their argument was, I think the Premier League said, well, you could have sold Johnson to Brentford and Forest. But there's two problems with that. One, the amount that they were offering us wouldn't have taken us under the PSR. And two, he didn't want to go. Which was the kind of thing. I think there was an argument from the Premier League that Atletico Madrid made an offer of 42 million for Johnson on the 30th of June, to which Forrest turned that, made a counter offer of about 55 million, and it went no further. So Forrest kind of like, well, we didn't have any other options after that until Spurs came in at the end of August. And Forrest was like, we didn't have any other assets to sell as well. So I think that was the basis of their argument. And I presume that is what the new argument will be. It'll be more negotiation based upon that. But like I said, I think I said it last week. I'll say it again. I just don't know why they just couldn't have gone 4 points. Yeah, it sucks. But realistically, with my, and I don't have this very often, my positive Forest fan hat on, realistically, within the next week, that could be null and void anyway. We could be above Luton by the time we reconvene next week. There's a realistic chance that Forest could be above Luton. And it's not, you know, and we're clear again. Whereas now, you're going to be sat looking over your shoulder thinking, we've got to be 4 points ahead of the bottom of the table back coming into the season. But actually, it could end up having to be six. But you might not know it, because you might think that you're going to get away with it. You might think, yeah, I just think.
Now
I'm going to start to sound like some kind of lefty kind of hack. Is that just a rich guy issue of, well, I don't have to put up with this shit, so I'm gonna appeal against it, because, you know, like, I think if the owner would have gone to most Forest fans and said, do you want me to appeal, I think most Forest fans would have turned around and gone, no, because we broke the rules and we kind of got our punishment, we kind of need to take it. Whereas he's gone, I'm not asking anybody, I'm pissed off with it. I think he would have handed in the appeal the day that we got last Monday, a week ago. I think he would have handed in the appeal as soon as they went, here's your punishment. He would have gone, lovely, thanks, here's my appeal back. But he had to be talked down for a week and then still did it anyway. It's kind of, I don't want to cast aspersions on the guy, which kind of got Donald Trump vibes to it, of like, well, I'm going to do it anyway, kind of thing, as opposed to, yeah, but nobody else wants you to do it because, you know, we've got one of the best lawyers in the country when it comes to sports and sports contracts and stuff like that, and he's managed to get it to 4 points. and you're still going to keep on going with it. You know, and you see the way that he stomps around the football ground, treating it the way he does, and you kind of think, he's custodian, you're not. You know, the football club will be here when you're gone, but at the moment, you're doing a really good job of trying to run it into the ground, and kind of, maybe I've got it wrong, but maybe I don't pay that much attention to it. I never thought that Forest were a hated club in the country. And I'm kind of now starting to get the feeling that they're a hated club kind of thing. You know, they think that we're Forest fans and the club are arrogant and stuck up and kind of think we deserve more than what we are because we won a couple of European Cups 40, 50 years ago.
I don't know if it's quite gone that sort of far yet. I think what might tend to happen is that obviously the longer it drags on, the longer you're going to have the possibility that if it drags on as long as May, then you're going to have the potential issue that if it does go to the sort of like the end of the season, and Forest have stayed up by. Like, you know, or they're in a place, there is a position where they're 4 points clear of Luton, say, but there's always this possibility that they could get another 5 points deduction added on or something like that, and then you've got the scenario where Luton end up winning their last game of the season, thinking that's enough to get them to that sort of middling threshold that then keeps them up. And you've got the scenario of all these Luton fans like invading the pitch, and like, they're like, "Oh yeah, great, we've got another team in Premier League football." And then obviously, like, it comes to like the week after, it's like, "Oh no, we're not enforcing that point deduction now," and like Forest end up finishing like 13th or something. And it's just I think the fans of obviously Forest and Luton and anyone else that's in that sort of vicinity want it sort of sorted as soon as possible. But obviously, I think the neutrals just want it, like, there's people out there who just watch the Premier League, like people in, like, you know, countries around, like Singapore or whatever, that don't really have a dog in the fight, but they like to watch the Premier League for sort of, like, both ends of the table and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It needs to be sorted, so to get to a point where if this is the appeal that they've put in, once they get to the sort of the verdict on the appeal that's been put in now, when that comes down, they need to definitively say to them, this is it though, this is the end of it, basically we've judged one way or the other that this, whatever we're putting down as the final punishment is it, there's no more appeals, there's no more going back on it, that is the final decision that's being made, and Forest is going to have to accept it. If they get the 4 points back, brilliant, happy days. But if it does come back and say, well, we gave you 4 points because you were cooperative, you've appealed it, so we now don't feel you were being cooperative, we're actually going to up it to 7 points or something like that. If that is the case, there's no point in whining about it. They made their own bed by appealing the verdict. And then they can't then just go and say, oh, we got relegated on a technicality, because whilst that is true, they kind of put themselves in that position, one, by overspending, and two, by appealing the verdict that hadn't put them in that predicament. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
A manageable thing. So, we'll see. Obviously, Leicester have been charged.
that one's a strange one, because obviously, they've been charged. Is it that they've been charged by the Football League?
Both.
Or they've now been charged by the Premier League as well?
No, they got charged by the Premier League, I think. But then, as part of the Premier League, couldn't put any sanctions on them because they're not in the Premier League currently. So then the EFL waded in and put them under a transfer embargo that I always want to call them bongo. Even though there are no transfer windows between now and when they potentially will be back in the Premier League.
It's great. 91 other clubs are also under a transfer embargo at the moment.
Yeah.
So.
It's funny, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just strange one, and obviously that one will play out more come the end of the season. And it's now gone from the point where Leicester seemed as if they were unrivaled challengers, like without challenge, to go up from the Championship, and they've since been reined in by both Leeds and Ipswich. So it has become more of a title.
It's good in a way that if like these new, and I mean not obviously for Forest, but it's good in a way that if these new rules are meaning that the charges are getting brought and pushed through more quickly, so they're kind of dealt with a bit closer to the time they actually happened. But because Leicester's fell before those changes as well, so that's why it's taken so much time. But like, what about Man City? They're still not getting talked about.
Or Chelsea, or I'm sure if they really started digging, there's probably a lot of clubs that, because the sneaky thing about this is that it's actually been about for 13 years. What hands up if you even fucking knew about it? No, you didn't, not until this season. But then there'll be other clubs that have spent massively over what they should have done in the past 13 years. And the annoying thing is going to happen is that it's all going to come out in the wash. And Forest and Everton are going to be some kind of scapegoat to try and get some new system in that will definitely favour the higher clubs with more money. And it'll end up being good. All right, well, here's Man City's charges. Here's Chelsea's charges. Oh, shit, here's some Man United and Liverpool ones because they spent a shit ton of money at different points. Here's a Villa one. Is, you know, you can go down the list where everybody's probably broken financial fair play and covered it up at some point, and they'll all go. It's a bit like kind of like, you know, the pointing Spider-Man one. We'll end up with like 18 clubs all Spider-Man pointing at each other, and the Premier League will go, ah, shall we call it a wash? Because we can't exactly relegate 20 clubs, or we can't have a season where everyone starts on minus 200. So it's who gets closest to zero. It's like a game of QI. The Premier League that year, it would probably make it like slightly more entertaining for the season. But I think that's, you know, it's, I think ultimately what's going to happen is they're all going to go, ah, it all equals each other out, so shall we just knock it on the head, lads? And then Forest and Everton have got screwed over to try and make a point. And then will, you know, it'll be changed over to something else that'll then be somehow circumnavigated by different clubs in different ways because the system's broken, basically.
I think that's basically, you probably summed it up perfectly with your last point there, for me. Where there are rules, there will always be someone who tries to get around those rules, no matter what the sort of the playing field is. So you can try and level it off as much as you want. There's always going to be some teams or some shady individuals who aren't going to play by the rules because they think they're different to everyone else. Welcome
until
to
something like
the society.
And like, I mean, Forest are a small fish, and you know, I know Forest took offence to it, but we are a small fish compared to others. But it happened 2 or 3 seasons ago with Saracens in the Rugby League, where they were paying to circumnavigate their salary cap, the owner of the club was investing in players' businesses or helping them set up businesses, which is a blatant circumnavigation of the salary cap because it didn't go through the club. You kind of think, and then they got loads of points taken off them. They effectively just relegated them. And until that happens to Man City and Chelsea and whoever else, then no one's going to change their behaviour.
Yep. And sadly, that basically, I think, is the long and short of it, to be honest with you. Well, not ideal. The Forest perspective, but we'll wait and see what the appeal brings to them. Let's just say that. So that's week 34, done and dusted. Week 35 is on the horizon. and it brings with it 8 delicious, tasty club fixtures. None of this international bollocks. That's out of the way now until the season has finished. So from now until the end of the season, nothing but club football. You'll be happy to hear. Like we said, 8 games to discuss in week 35. 2 apiece for each of our teams, no less. That's what happens when you get a boatload of Easter fixtures coming your way. So, 8 games to predict. We probably won't get them in the time we've got remaining on this particular record. So we are going to step away momentarily just to get ourselves geared up to go through those predictions. You won't need to do anything, though. It'll just pop up in your feed. So, don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Recording in progress.
And just like that, we're back at it. So, week 34, done and dusted. Week 35, yet to come. And what a week 35 it is, ladies and gentlemen. No less than 8 games in total. It is obviously the Easter period. So, a lot of our teams will be busy, busy boys over the next couple of weeks. So, Easter festivities get kicked off with the start of week 35 fixtures, which takes us to the MKM Stadium for Hull City versus Stoke City. Obviously, it's Mr. Woodmansey's team. He will give his prediction last. As is usually the case, I'll just jump in straight away here as I've got mine written down nicely in front of me. I've got for Hull to get back to winning ways on this one with a 2-1 victory. Goals for Carvalho and Philogy for Hull. Morant for Stoke. Stu doesn't look impressed. Carry on.
Well, I'll just jump in here, shall I, and just say, put the same for me, but put Meme down for Stoke instead of Laurent.
So, just to clarify, that is 2 predictions so far. 2-1 Hull City wins. You want, what was his name?
Meme.
Is it MMEE?
MMAEE.
It's almost like a cheat
base. Meh. Stoke is quite close to Wales, so you've got to be kind of.
Obviously, huge apologies to any of the family that are listening to the podcast. We mean.
It's alright, they won't know we're talking about them, so it's fine.
Well, yeah, it's quite. Andy, what have you got down for Hull versus Stoke?
For Hull versus Stoke, just 1-0 to Hull. With Sharp to score.
It would be his first in Tigers colours. Let's hope it happens. So, do I just need to write ditto marks for Mr. Woodmansey, or... have you got a different prediction to send my way?
Well, almost. I have 2-1 Hull, with Philogene and Carvalho for Hull, and Jun Ho for Stoke.
Jun Ho. He's the guy who scored against Borough, I think. Jun-ho. Like I said, so only a couple of letters away from being absolutely a Borough legend. But never mind. We'll get to that later on. Our next game, also on Good Friday, sees Southampton taking on my team, Middlesbrough. Obviously, my team, therefore I will go last. Let's go over to Matt for his Southampton versus Middlesbrough prediction.
I'm disappointed if you haven't got one of my Southampton scorers written down already.
But but you could have had him down for a hat trick, so I didn't want to write his name down, too many times.
I've got 2-1 for Southampton. 2-1.
And how many of those two goals will be scored by Mr. Smallbone?
Just the one, you know. He's only small.
Just the tiniest of bones. Just one for Smallbone. The other one?
Adam Armstrong.
Armstrong A?
Yes.
And the ball goal?
Popping up. Fours for your lot.
Andy?
0-2.
You meant this.
You know me. I like to go optimistic.
Your two Middlesbrough goal scorers, or your one Middlesbrough goal scorer twice?
The Fours and Greenwood.
Stew? 1-1. Uno?
Yeah. Both teams have been on a bit of, well, not a losing form of late, so I figured the draw seems appropriate. So I've gone for Che Adams for Southampton and Isaiah Jones for you guys.
Very nice. Isaiah Jones back in the fold in the last game. I think it was his first start since late December. I've gone for a 2-0 Southampton win. They're in the top four for a reason, and I've gone for both of the Armstrongs, A and S, one apiece. Don't think we'll get anything out of the game. I think it'll probably put an end to any outside lingering hopes we had for the playoffs. And that'll be that. Our third game takes us past Good Friday and into just Saturday. No special name for it. It's just Saturday. Where Nottingham Forest take on Crystal Palace. Obviously, it's Mr. Moore's team, therefore he will go last with his prediction. I've got a 1-0 Forest win here with a Morgan Gibbs White goal. Stu, what have you got down for this?
I have another, my second consecutive 1-1 draw. I've got Elanga for Forest and Palace. I have Eze.
Andy?
1-0. And I presume you've already written down about my condition.
I believe it's been confirmed medically that he's got wood.
I do indeed have wood.
Go on, Matt. How's how you think it'll go for you boys?
I've gone for a 2-1 Forest win.
Oh, no.
I'm hoping that they've come back from the international break. There's been most of the players have been back at Forest, minus the goalkeeper who's playing against England tonight. Or played against England tonight. And I'm hoping that just like everything that's happened kind of rejuvenated the club. And like obviously, hopefully the fans, I think from the games that I've watched and listened to, the fans have been, they've gone back to the bad old days of sitting there and expecting everything as opposed to realising that we're not quite as good as what we are and we need to get behind them. But hopefully, all the nonsense with the points deduction will have kind of rejuvenated the fans, and the City Ground is that kind of cauldron that it was last year. But hopefully that's happened, and I've gone for Wood and Gibbs White to score for Forest and Eze for Palace, so 2-1.
Do you say Eze for Palace?
Yeah.
Lovely jubbly. We skip ahead a further day to Sunday. Not just any old Sunday. Easter Sunday. Where Manchester City take on Arsenal. Manchester City, of course, being Mr. Cook's team. Therefore, he will give his prediction last. I've got 2-1 Manchester City. However, Man City have lost potentially two of their what you would have argued been starting defenders in consecutive England games, as Kyle Walker went off injured in the game against Brazil, and John Stones had to go off injured in the game against Belgium. So that might affect Man City slightly, but I still do think they'll have enough to get a 2-1 victory. Goes for Haaland and Doku for Man City, and one for Martinelli for Arsenal. Matt, what have you got down for Man City Arsenal?
I've gone for a 1-1 draw for this one.
Okay.
I've gone with Haaland and Odegaard.
Very Norwegian flavour to it, that year. Stu?
So, we've passed that magical time of year where Newcastle can't win a trophy, and we're about to hit that second magical time of the year where Arsenal just go to shit. So, Man City have a way of just grinding out a result in the games that they need to. So, I've gone for a dirty 1-0 against the Arsenal, as opposed to the old famous saying. And cometh the man, cometh the hour. King Ginge himself sticking me down for De Bruyne.
Indy B for the win. Go on then, Andy, how do you see your boys getting on?
I thought you'd snaffled my prediction, because I also had a 2-1 Man City win. Haaland and Alvarez for Man City, and Saka for Arsenal. Sorry, I meant up the...
Very, very nice. Of course, Kaya Saka withdrew from the England squad with an injury. Whether he was actually injured or if he was just told that he had an injury by the Arsenal. Who could possibly say?
Well, he's got a more important game coming up on Sunday than either of the two friendlies. So.
I mean, it's not really up for debate, is it? That is absolutely the case. We move. No, go on.
I never get the March friendlies.
Pointless. Very, very pointless. We move from Easter Sunday to Easter Monday. I always figured that they sort of missed a bit of a trick here, because obviously you had Good Friday, and surely it should not just be like Better Sunday, and then like the Best Monday or something like that, because like Good Friday, and then all the sort of decent sort of connotations just get thrown into the mix. And they're all gone.
It's Holy Sunday, and obviously that's meant to be better than good, but depends on your leanings in life.
It's not a story. You'd have thought Friday would have been holier, but that's an entirely different conversation.
Well, quite. And our first fixture on Easter Monday sees my boys at Middlesbrough taking on Sheffield Wednesday. Now, there is a possibility I may be in attendance at this fixture. So if that is the case, I'll be able to give you a full rundown of the game in its entirety when we come to discuss it next week. Obviously, it is my team, therefore I will give the prediction last. So let's go to Stu for his prediction first on Middlesbrough versus Sheffield Wednesday.
2-0 Borough. Wednesday are woeful this season. Considering that they did beat us by cheating at their place as well. I'll go with Latte Laugh and Force. And yes, I did say that name. Please don't go into the fetal position in shock.
Strange things have happened on this podcast. Matt?
I've gone for a 2-1 Borough win. Kind of remedy the Good Friday situation.
Goal scorers?
Latte Laugh and Aziz.
Yeah.
And football, because once again, it's just funny to say.
Who doesn't love a bit of an Ugbo? Andy?
As you may be in attendance, they're going to give you a goal. So 1-0.
I like it. And who might score that one goal?
Apparently, I'm not the only person to think that coffee's going to be on the menu. So latte, lad.
Frothy, hot, milk-laden beverages for everybody. Except for me, as I've gone for a 2-0 Borough win, but I've got goals by McGree and Azaz. No latte involved. We move to the second game of Easter Sunday, and definitely the more important of the two fixtures being played on Easter Sunday. This one's live on Sky Television and sees Leeds United playing Hull City. Stu immediately wagging his finger. He doesn't like this.
No, because you said it was on Sunday and it's Monday.
Bloody, you know what I meant. It was the Moses lack. Basically, I was hoping that Andy would just edit that in post. I do apologise. Easter Monday, the second of, and they're definitely the most important of the two fixtures from Easter Monday. Leeds United taking on Hull City in a battle of the teams in the top eight. I think.
I thought we were clinging on to seventh still.
Oh, I don't know. Well, yeah. Obviously, it's Mr. Wilmington's prediction of the team, so he will predict last. I'm assuming not in attendance for this one.
No, it's at Bellend Road. There was the thought of possibly attempting it at one point, and then they moved it to an 8 o'clock kickoff, which then is annoying because everybody's back at work the next day or whatever. Unless you're on half-term holiday. But they really restricted the tickets. They gave out the tickets in two batches. And then, because they were in such high demand, because it's one of the nearest games, and it's them shitbags, they did a thing where, like, if you've been to, like, so many, like, away games, if the wind was blowing in a easterly direction and it was above 5 degrees when you went, then you could buy an extra ticket and things like that. They made it overly complicated, but basically if you've been to a few games you had priority, but rather than just saying you've been to two games, it was you have to have 250 points or some nonsense. But yeah, that was a really long way of saying no, I'm not going. I will be watching it on TV though.
Yes, I dare say that anyone who has access to the Sky Telebox might be tuning into this particular game. I've gone for a 2-2 draw in this one. Leeds have been virtually unstoppable since the turn of the year. They drew against Huddersfield. I'd like to think that they're due a run of bad results. So let's hope it starts with this. So I've gone 2-2. I've gone for James and Somerville to score for Leeds, Tufan and Zaruri to score for Hull. Matt?
I've also gone for 2-2 draw. And I've gone for Nonto. And Bamford.
Ah. Chief wind-up merchant himself. For Hull?
And Zaruri and Philogene again.
Love the fact that Matt's just picked the Holy Grail duo for Leeds. He's gone for Little Willie Bogford as a pairing, effectively.
Andy?
Is someone playing Scum this week? Because pretty sure that's a 5-0 absolute tonking, yeah? I was really tempted to do the 5-0. But I didn't. Just the 0-3 then. Two for Sharp and one for Zaruri.
That would of course be Old Boy Rubble, as Billy Sharp did have a spell at Leeds, so that would very much be in effect. Go on, Stu. How do you want it to pan out? But I know that. How do you see it play out?
Oh, we'll lose. We'll lose. I've got us down for a 1-0 defeat with the constantly named Crescenzio Somerville to score the goal. If you were really going to be looking for some tenuous all-boy goals, then you could put Louis Coyle down to score for Hull, seeing as he used to play for them, but there's probably more chance of me scoring, unfortunately.
Right. You heard it here first. Lump on, Coyle, 1-0 Hull.
Be fine if he does. I'd be more than happy to be wrong.
All we're saying. Our second to last game, and this is outside of the Easter weekend fixtures now. We move to Tuesday. I don't know, do we call this one Shit Tuesday because everyone's back at work? I don't know.
Not all of us.
But, yeah. Well, yes, yeah, some of us have chosen a wise career and get quite a lot of time off. So. Either way, it's a second consecutive home fixture for Nottingham Forest as they take on Fulham. Obviously, Mr. Moore's team, he will go last. I've got a 2-2 draw on this one. Goal apiece for Wood and DeLange for Forest, Muniz and Iwobi for Fulham. Obviously, for fans of the podcast from last season, Muniz, a name that was eligible for the entire season, but you heard very little of from a middle of the perspective. And yet, he's gone back to where Fulham and has turned into an absolute fucking goal machine, apparently. So, work that one out. Stu?
Unfortunately, Matt, I've got Forest 1, Fulham 2. Fulham seem to turn up a little bit of late, so I'm just... Yeah, I'm not. I feel a bit dirty for that one, but I'm not happy. I have gone for Wood, Forest, and I've got Iwobi and Pereira for Fulham.
Who was your second one?
Pereira.
Oh, Pereira. Sorry, I thought you said Herrera. Andy?
I also don't feel amazing about the prediction I'm about to give because I've gone with a 1-1 draw. I've still got Wood. I've got Iwobi.
Iwobi, a popular name tonight. Wasn't expecting to hear that. Matt, how do you see it going for your boys?
Over the two fixtures that we predicted, I thought one will be a Forest win and one will be a Forest draw. So obviously my previous one was a Forest win. I'm going with the draw for this one, but I won't be surprised if it was the opposite way around. So I've gone for a 2-2 Forest draw. Forest and Fulham draw. Callum Hudson-Odoi and Alanga. Forest and Muniz and Willian for Fulham.
Sorry, what were you thinking for Fulham draw was Muniz?
And Willian.
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 Will I am. One of the Black Eyed Peas himself. And our final game of the week sees Andy's team again, Manchester City, at home again, taking on Aston Villa. Not quite as much of a challenge as the Arsenal, but Aston Villa did beat them earlier in the season at Villa Park. So it'll be interesting to see if Man City can get a measure of revenge for that result. I believe they will. Obviously, Mr. Cook will go last with his prediction. I believe they will. I believe they've got the goods to produce a 3-0 win here. Goal for Alvarez and 2 for Phil Foden. For me, Stu, what have you got down for this?
Again, they know when to grind these results out. Villa are having a cracking season by their standards, but I've got Manchester City to win 2-1. I've got Haaland and Foden for City, and I've got Watkins for Villa.
Matt?
2-1 Man City win. Silva and Haaland for Man City.
Yep.
And Watkins for Villa.
And closing us out for the week, Mr. Cook giving us the details on his boys once more. How do you see it going?
2-0. And as I get into that groove of predicting the same people to score, Haaland and Alvarez, one apiece.
Very, very nice indeed. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That brings us to the end of a bumper edition, needless to say. We brought down the England games to start with, and then we went back to the actual football that everyone enjoys watching and discussing. As we said on last week's podcast, international break tends to be a little bit dull. Well, that's my personal opinion. I don't know how you guys feel, but I always feel it sort of almost feels like a bit of a football holiday, from my perspective. But
preparing you for the end of the season, where you get to like a Tuesday and there's no football on to watch, or. And by Thursday, you're like, oh, there's a game. Oh, no, there's no real game, though.
Yes. This week is very much not the case, as obviously we have a bumper 8-game pack over the next days. Thank you, as always, to these three wonderful gentlemen for joining me to go through the details of their teams and bringing you the ups and downs, the ins and outs. Join us again next week. Thank you to all of you for tuning in. Join us again next week. We'll break down the games of Borough, Hull, Forest and Man City. And hopefully we'll have some positive results to bring you. But until then, thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. Look after one another. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
There you go. What do you think of that? Again, apologies for any outages you may have experienced. I am desperately trying to get it sorted, but you know how these things go. Big thank you for watching, big thank you for listening, big thank you for being here. Before you go, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. Check out the website, freshly paid for, freshly minted website, thecookiecast.com. There we've got social media links and an email button. And that way you can get in touch with us. That is it for this one. Until next time, I'm going to say bye, and I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to these grumpy old men talk about football. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe.